It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18+. I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Ken Gerhardt back with us. Ken is widely recognized cryptozoologist, author, lecturer who frequents appears on television, has traveled the world searching for evidence of mysterious creatures, including Bigfoot, the Loch Ness Monster, the Chupacabra, Mothman. In addition, Ken has written a number of books on the subject of unknown animals, and his research has been featured on numerous TV shows as well. Several of his books include The Essential Guide to Bigfoot, Encounters with Flying Humanoids, Mothman, Man-Birds, Gargoyles, and Other Winged Creatures and Beasts as well. His website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Ken, what a bizarre story about that fisherman, huh?
Good evening, George. Always an honor to speak with you, my friend.
Good to have you with us.
Yeah, that is a weird story. Yeah, I just caught wind of that in the last couple of days myself.
Now, you came across a strange one, too, about a Bigfoot skull being dug up or something. What happened?
Yeah, this is pretty big news in the Bigfoot world. Just a few days ago, actually last week, a wildlife researcher and YouTuber named Coyote Peterson posted a video of what appeared to be a large hominid skull, a great ape skull that he was digging up out of the mud in British Columbia, Canada, which of course is has a long history and tradition of the so-called Sasquatch.
That's right.
So this created a lot of buzz. Looking at the video, George, most Bigfoot researchers with just a basic understanding of physical anthropology will recognize that it is clearly a gorilla-type skull. It displayed a lot of prognathism, that is, the jaw was kind of pushed forward. And in thousands of Bigfoot and Sasquatch accounts, almost across the board, we always hear descriptions of a relatively flat profiler face. So this thing didn't really look like a Bigfoot or a Sasquatch at first, but it turns out that it seems as though that this particular skull is either a gorilla skull replica that was planted there, perhaps by this gentleman or someone else, and less likely that it is actually a gorilla skull that just randomly ended up in the mud up there in British Columbia, Canada. But unfortunately, not a Bigfoot or Sasquatch skull. Although maybe this is a precursor to a future event, and how we will discover definitive evidence that Bigfoot exists.
Why hasn't science, Ken, done a more thorough job investigating and searching for Bigfoot? I mean, it's left it up to the good cryptozoologists like you to go hunting, but why haven't they done something concerted as a major effort?
Well, there have been a handful of scientists through the years that have gotten involved, of course, physical anthropologists like Dr. Grover Krantz, Dr. Jeff Meldrum, John Bindernagel, and so forth. But you're right. The majority of the scientific establishment, I think for a number of reasons, I think Bigfoot is a very hands-off subject. It's very controversial. There doesn't seem to be, unless you really delved into the evidence, there doesn't seem to be a lot of evidence superficially. Now, cryptozoologists like myself realize how much evidence there is in terms of physical trace evidence, footprints, thousands of sightings, native legends, and so forth. But I think many scientists are probably afraid of their reputations being tarnished, losing stature at their institutions, missing out on grants, and so forth. So it's very unfortunate, but hopefully we'll reach a point where more scientists will become involved.
There is a camp in the Bigfoot area that believes this creature is dimensional, not physical, but dimensional. What do you think of that?
That's true. I run across those accounts, claims. I would say Bigfoot experiencers, people that claim that there are sort of supernatural elements to Bigfoot, that it's able to use what they call mind speak, telepathically communicating, that it can cloak its body and vanish it, you know, into thin air. So I've never experienced any of that stuff, and I've been investigating Bigfoot for decades all over the continent. I know a number of leading Bigfoot investigators starting in the 50s, the giants of the field like John Green, Rene DeHinden, Peter Byrne. None of those guys ever experienced anything supernatural, but those accounts do come in, you know, they do come into play. Now, I would say that the evidence would point to the fact that it's a minority of reports, a very small percentage that actually describe these supernatural attributes.
The Northwest region, Ken, of the United States seems to be loaded with these reports, too.
Yes. Traditionally, we first heard of the Sasquatch in British Columbia, Canada. But, you know, starting in the 1920s, there was a guy named J.W. Burns that was documenting native traditions of these hairy giants. And then, of course, we heard about Bigfoot coming out of Northern California in the 1950s when footprints were being found. Traditionally, Washington and Oregon have a lot of accounts. So, yes, the Pacific Northwest seems to be the sort of the nexus of Bigfoot or Sasquatch activity, although you do have a lot of reports in some eastern states like Florida, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Kentucky, Texas, and so forth.
Do you get reports of Thunderbirds, these huge pterodactyl-type birds?
Yes. In fact, that's one of my primary focuses within the field of cryptozoology are accounts of winged cryptids. I get two basic types, George. I do get the pterodactyl-type accounts, people describing something prehistoric with leathery wings and reptilian features, wingspans ranging from 6 to 20 feet across. I also get reports of feathered, giant feathered birds, monster birds with wingspans 15 to 20 feet across, basically like about the size of small airplanes. So we do get both types of accounts. Both are labeled Thunderbirds, although the pterodactyl types, of course, would not be birds at all, but flying reptiles, if those exist. But yes, there are a number of those accounts. Just last year, I actually mounted an expedition to north central Pennsylvania to search for the monster bird type of Thunderbird. That region in the Black Forest up there seems to have a long history of accounts of these monster birds dating back to the 1920s and even the 19th century.
And they're bigger than the condors, aren't they?
Yes. The North American condor, the California condor, Gymnogypes californianus, has a wingspan of about 9.5 feet across at the biggest.
That's still a big bird.
That's a big bird. But the average wingspan reported for a Thunderbird, a modern Thunderbird, and this is based out of my, I have a database of sightings and a lot of data on this, is about 14 feet across. Now, that's an estimate. Because people, of course, are unfortunately very poor at estimating the size of things that are flying up in the air. So,
wasn't there a report that somebody was flying their Cessna and a Thunderbird came right by it and was just as big?
Yes, pretty much. There was a bush pilot named John Bucher up in Alaska. And in October of 2002, he was flying his Cessna plane with a passenger and claims that he saw one of these Thunderbirds flying alongside of him. Now, he estimated its wingspan is about 14 feet across, which was about half the width of his plane, or about the length of one wing, which is still pretty darn big. I mean, much larger than a condor, of course.
What happened at the Amarillo Zoo? Something was happening out there.
Yeah, it's actually been a kind of an interesting year for cryptid events, George. So on at the end of May, May 21st to be exact, of this year, at about 1:30 in the morning, there was apparently an image or video captured by security cameras at the Amarillo Zoo. And in the image, which quickly went viral online, there appears to be a humanoid or a bipedal type of being, sort of wolf-like features, pointy ears and a snout, seems to be furry and somewhat humanoid-looking. Slightly amorphous quality to it, but, you know, people were guessing all over. You know, people were coming at me left and right asking me what I thought of this thing. Now, of course, many people tried to connect this thing to the so-called dog man, which is kind of like a half-man, half-dog type creature that people have been reporting all over North America.
Right. Walks upright?
Yeah, walks upright, mostly. There are accounts of them sometimes going down on all fours, but they do have humanoid features. But this particular figure in the video, there are a couple of issues. One is that it has kind of a strange posture. That is, its torso and upper body seems to be kind of leaning backward against its what appear to be its legs. So it's not standing exactly upright or leaning forward, which is what we would expect to see. And like many cryptid videos and images, it's a little bit ambiguous. So even if you enhance the image, it's hard to tell exactly what we're looking at. Some people think that it might be kind of a hoaxer, somebody in a costume playing a prank. What I noticed when I blew up the image is that it the image lacks biological symmetry. That is, it doesn't appear to be an animal or a person. It has kind of almost a phantom-like quality to it. So then you could speculate that maybe it's something more supernatural if you believe in that type of thing, or maybe it's just an optical illusion of some kind.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Kenny, we don't hear too much about the Loch Ness Monster anymore. How come?
Well, I think the people that are tied into the Loch Ness Monster, and there are researchers on Loch Ness that have you know, like Steve Felton and others that have been studying the phenomenon for years. And they do collect about 10 good reports still each year. But, George, the most notable thing with regard to the Loch Ness Monster phenomenon is that in recent years there have been some remarkable sonar contacts of very large unidentified objects swimming around under the loch. And, for example, as recently as April of this year, there was a tourist named Tom Ingram who was on a cruise tour boat going across Loch Ness. And when he glanced over at the sonar screen, he saw this huge solid mass swimming about 400 feet below the boat. And very similar to a sonar contact that was made in October of 2020 by a guy named Ronald McKenzie, who was operating a tour boat. And these masses are about 30 to 40 feet long. They appear to be moving around and animate. And really, the sonar evidence is the most overlooked aspect of the Loch Ness phenomenon. We know that there have been a number of hoaxed photos. There are a number of eyewitness accounts numbering in the thousands. But dating back to the 1954, there have been consistent unidentified sonar contacts with huge 30 to 40 foot objects swimming around under the loch, and really no one has been able to adequately explain what those are.
Pretty dramatic. It's amazing. And whatever the creature is, since it's been going on, has had to have died, and they must be reproducing. It can't live that long.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. If we assume that it's an unknown species, then there would have to be a viable breeding population in the loch. Now, what that would consist of, you know, it'd be pure speculation, George, but it's been estimated that you would have to have at least maybe a dozen individuals to avoid any type of genetic bottlenecks, you know, where a species could go extinct. So it sounds hard to believe, but when you figure how much water is in Loch Ness, I think it's like 263 billion cubic feet of water. I mean, the loch is like 800 feet deep. There could conceivably be a group or a family of these creatures down there.
Tell us about the Minnesota Iceman.
The Minnesota Iceman is one of those weird subplots in the field of Bigfoot. Now, way back in 1969, two cryptozoologists announced that they had examined the dead body of some ape-like humanoid creature that was frozen in a block of ice, and strangely had been shown around at different carnivals and sideshows in the Midwest and elsewhere. And this created quite a stir in the media, of course. The Smithsonian Institute became involved for a short time. The FBI almost became involved. And then the owner of this particular exhibit, a guy named Frank Hansen, apparently got nervous and disappeared for a while. And when he resurfaced, he claimed that he had hidden this creature, and now he had this model or replica that he was going to tour around with instead, and you know, basically represented it. So a lot of conspiracy folks in the Bigfoot field think that there was a Bigfoot body, a dead Bigfoot that this guy had in this block of ice, and that basically he disappeared with it when he felt like he might get into some kind of legal jeopardy. So that's kind of the story. In recent years, the latex Minnesota Iceman, we know for sure it's latex. Several of us have examined it, has turned up at the Museum of the Weird in Austin, and it's on display to this day. But there are still many people who think that there was an actual flesh and blood version that this model was based on, because these two cryptozoologists studied this thing. And now, granted, it was frozen in ice. They weren't granted the courtesy of having it thawed out, but they examined this thing for like 2 or 3 days, and they were convinced that it was real.
Could they see it pretty well, even though it was in ice?
Well, the ice was somewhat opaque in places, and they were challenged as far as it was being kept in kind of a small tractor trailer. So they did their very best job they did photographs as best they could, sketches. The main thing is that they claimed they could smell its rotting, decaying flesh coming up through cracks in the ice in the enclosure.
Interesting.
And they could see gaseous bubbles of decomposition. So that's what really convinced them that it was real, is that whatever they were looking at seemed to be decomposing flesh.
Wasn't there a case a couple of years ago, Ken, where some people claimed they had a carcass of Bigfoot, but it was really a costume that they stuffed with deer guts?
Yeah.
You remember
exactly.
that?
Yep, that was like in 2008 or 9, I believe, and some guys in Georgia. And this was actually based on the Minnesota Iceman in kind of a funny kind of way. It was a hoax.
They almost got away with it.
They almost did. They made a big media announcement, and allegedly they sold this thing to a guy for $10,000. And it was a pretty big deal at the time, but it was exposed as a hoax.
I booted a guy off the show, I won't mention his name, who was charging for people to look at Bigfoot that he claimed he had captured. And he said, you know, for a couple bucks, folks, you get to turn on the TV and go see it. And and of course, there was
I wonder who that might be.
Yeah. You know who it was.
Yeah, I probably do.
But, are there a lot of hoaxsters out there?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Hoaxing has been a big part of the Bigfoot field and also cryptozoology in general. I mentioned many photos of the Loch Ness Monster were hoaxed. The famous surgeon's photo that everyone knows of, the Loch Ness Monster, the head and neck photo, is most likely a hoax. There have been a lot of hoaxed Bigfoot prints and films and things as well. So, it's hard to figure out exactly why that happens, George. I'm thinking that a lot of it might be sort of based in economics. It seems like Bigfoot is, big money. And so is Loch Ness and some of these other cryptids as well. And of course, some people just like attention or like stirring the pot, I guess.
Star Wars, Chewbacca, I think he was modeled after a Bigfoot, wasn't he?
That is a rumor that's been circulating for years that George Lucas may have modeled Chewbacca on a Bigfoot. Now, here's a funny story about that. They filmed the third film, Return of the Jedi. Part of it was filmed in Northern California. And when Chewbacca was on set and walking around, they actually put an orange vest on the actor. I can't remember his name. Mayhew, I think. Peter Mayhew.
So somebody wouldn't shoot him, huh?
So somebody would not shoot him thinking he was a Bigfoot walking around. So there's definitely a Chewbacca Bigfoot connection in that respect.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern. And go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.